Hi, everybody. It's David with the Everything podcast on Anchor. I just left off with how men think and the idea of fantasy thinking is very, very important. And I'll talk a little bit after how fantasy thinking correlates with how women think. But first, let's give a definition of how women think. You're not crazy. Women are not overly sensitive or emotional, even though sometimes it appears that way. The whole purpose of the way women think is through hope. And hope creates expectations. It's really kind of a fascinating thing that men have really no idea, and women don't really talk about the idea of how they think. They talk in terms of I thought or I think, or in the way that it's presented is very straightforward, very concrete. In fact, it's less waverable than men. If you remember from the men's podcast. It's situational, the way that men think, and women are not. They're universally concrete. So if they say something in front of one group of people, they're going to say it in front of multiple groups of people, and exactly the same way. They don't waver from it so much. That's partly how they're trained up as women, because women have those conversations of, well, do you believe this? Do you believe that? And whatever they believe, and sometimes it takes a while for them to come to an agreement of what they believe, simply because once they agree upon it, it's done. It's absolutely in concrete. And, you know, that really affects them when they get to rules and other ways of understanding. And I'll talk a little bit about that in future podcasts that deal with guilt and self-esteem. But for now, suffice it to say that women conceptualize their thinking into this idea of hope. And I call it the hope bubble, and the hope bubble looks a lot like a regular bubble. If I was to pop it out of women's heads and I was to kind of put it out there, in my mind, the visualization that I do to kind of understand the universe and understand myself and all other human beings that I've studied my entire life, I see this as like a bubble, you know, it kind of floats a little bit. But in reality, what it looks like is a crystal ball. And I don't know how many people out there have actually seen a crystal ball, a true crystal ball, not like a plastic one. But when you look through a crystal ball, there's a couple of different things that happen, which very much to me is similar to how I understand women to think. The whole bubble, if it were a crystal ball, which I kind of use it as an example, when you look through it, the prism that's created is a very, very small thing. So like if you were to look through a crystal ball, the opening that you can see through and see in front of you looks a little different than what it does when you remove the crystal ball from your line of sight. But when you kind of use that as a lens and you look through it, it creates a coned way of looking so that when you look through, you have this very small kind of what it looks like in the future, right? Or what it looks like in front of you. Definitely not something that you want to utilize to guide you, but it's just enough to give you a little bit of glimpse of the light at the end of the tunnel or what's ahead of you, just enough to kind of give you that idea. And that's what women do. They just want just enough to believe, just enough to get through it, just enough to understand. But that's really the extent of future, right? If you back away from a crystal ball and you try to, you keep a crystal ball right in front of you and you kind of look at the sphere, you can't make out, kind of the spherical shape of it. It almost looks like, if you go around it, you'll see this glass almost line that goes around. And it's really kind of fascinating. If you ever get a chance to look at one, you can kind of look at it, but there's a certain point. So as that focus, that prismed focus cone-shaped prism focus. As you kind of expand out to the left and right of it, it gets cloudy. And then you have this like dark kind of ring that goes around on the outside, right? And you're just looking at that side. That represents the present moment. The present moment for women is very, very cloudy. It's not something that a lot of women like to be in. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't be, you know, in the car. They can't be, you know, this, that, or the other thing. But that's not where their mind is. They can physically be present, but that present moment, present mind, always has a historical context. So then if you back away from looking at just the structure of the crystal ball and you try to use the surface, the back surface that faces you, you're still holding the crystal ball in front of you, it works like a mirror and you can see almost everything. You can see behind you. It's like an eye in the back of your head. You can see a little bit. I would guesstimate. I've never really set out the actual angles of it, but I'm assuming that, you know, you could almost see 180, maybe even 270 degrees of visibility just using the surface of that crystal ball. And that's really how women see. They just need enough to believe in a future. They just need enough to know it's there, which is that prism thing. They really don't like to be in the present moment, but all of their present moments really have an existence of the past. See, the past educates their future. And so whatever has happened in their past, that's what tells them what's going to happen in the future. That's what they believe. And so it's really kind of funny because, you know, sometimes men will say, oh, you know, well, I'm going to do this. And a woman will go, yeah, you said that like the umpteenth time and you still haven't been able to make it work. I believe in my future that is probably not going to work. But if you want to do it, you go right ahead. I already know what's going to happen. Well, how do they know what's going to happen? Because their life is measured by the extent of their history. Likewise, if there's some type of infidelity, there's divorce, whatever that might be that challenges them or causes them to create a new history, that new history is very, very difficult for them to do because it means I have to give up the old history. And it's just scary because, you know, a woman that moves into a new history or creating a new history, again, they don't have much of a present moment. And the future is so narrow that really all they have is you have to create a new history. And it's very difficult for a woman to jump over onto another set of railroad tracks, basically, to create that new history. So what am I talking about here? Well, what I'm talking about is women have milestones throughout their lives. They talk about these milestones. We see it exemplified in like Barbie types of dolls, even to the extent that a tomboy has a certain understanding of what it's going to be in the future to a very small degree. They could go into the military. They could go be a cowboy. They can be whatever they want to be. Princess, they can be, you know, that ideal model, whatever it is, but that's just a glimpse. It's just a small thing. But the milestones help them know that they achieve it. So the milestones can be, you know, that that first day of school, those, you know, if they sentimental types of things that families do, you know, their first boyfriend, their first kiss, the first guy that asked them out, the first even, you know, their first period, the first boyfriend. All these things kind of help them understand what their future is going to be like. You know, the idea of psychodynamic theory, which is this psychological theory, which basically in a very brief nutshell, basically says that you've had all of your relationships that you're ever going to have by the time you reach 12. And then you spend the rest of your life working through and re-encountering those relationships with different people, but the same relationships for the rest of your life. Well, this is that daddy issue and those daddy issues, you know, that are with women. You know, they always have a historical context. They, whatever they went through in the past, is what they can look forward to in the future. So, you know, oftentimes if they've been sexually abused or if they've been raped, then that's why they lose sight of what type of woman they can be, because it's that historical perspective. And if they're to create a new history, that's even scarier than what their past already is. So they tend to believe that they're broken or they're worthless or they're whatever, and they'll hold on to it with a death grip because nobody's taught them how to have a new history. And so oftentimes when people come in to see me, one of the things that I really strive for is if you want to move forward, you have to create a new history. If you're already on the trajectory for a new history, then you need to start creating a new history, not just accepting the old one. Because a lot of times, you know, women will come in and if they're dating heterosexually, they're dating the same guy over and over and over again. And they're getting the exact same results that they've gotten over and over and over again, you know. And then we get into, I don't know whether it was Albert Einstein or not, but I believe it was Albert Einstein that was quoted saying that, you know, when you do the same thing over and over again and you expect different results, that's the definition of insanity. And you know, there's truth in that because women live in the historical perspectives. So there is this education of what my future looks like. And you'll hear it when women talk, when they talk to each other, when they talk about men, when they talk to men. There's always this presence of history, you know, in an argument. Well, don't you remember you said back on, you know, September, 30th at, 12:21 PM, that you said this exactly to me. And, you know, and I know that because you were wearing this and you had just picked up the paper and you did, you know, and guys, they just get caught off guard with that because they don't understand that. That history is so important to women. It galvanizes what their future potentially could be like. And remember when I was talking about men, men live in that fantasy thinking. And so fantasy thinking doesn't have much of a historical perspective. And if there is a historical perspective, it's often matched up with an emotionality, not a verbal type of thing. So that when women are looking at, you told me, they're remembering history by what they were told. Not so much the experience, but the experience that was named. And from kind of a biblical perspective, you know, that idea of woman that was named and Adam named Eve. And I don't, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, but he did. And so this idea of naming, really has kind of a male kind of idea behind it, to the extent that women often feel that to modern day, that there's this presence of I just have to go through these different feelings, but I don't know what they are, and I don't have the definition of it. And so looking from that historical perspective of, you know, this is what you told me in the past, educates what their future is potentially going to be like. And of course, the more that gets reinforced over time, the more that they just finally get to a place of, well, this is what it is. You know, there's no longer a potential. I already know what my future is. This is what it's going to be. And that can happen early or that can happen later. It just depends on the severity of the conditions. Obviously, like I said, if there was a lot of childhood abuse, teenage abuse, then you know, in their 20s or whatnot, they accept abuse and they sometimes look for it. You know, that's the only way that I know that I'm loved, is through the abuse. And if you don't abuse me, then I don't know that we can be together. Not that they want that, because in their mind they think that they don't want that. But the reality is that their history educates their future, and their history is safe. It provides them some understanding of, this is what I'm used to. And that creates difficulty for a lot of guys trying to break into those cycles, because they are looking to change the history, but they just don't understand that doesn't make any sense to women. It really doesn't. So a lot of times, if they are going to create a new history, they really have to incorporate some of their old history with it, just for safety reasons. Worked with a woman one time that had given up everything to move in with a guy, and she was a beautiful woman, but you know, there was kind of a mismatch in my mind. When I looked at them, I kind of saw this guy as like a 9 or a 10. I kind of saw this woman as probably like a 6 or a 7, a little older than the guy that she was with, but she gave up everything. She moved in, got everything together, and then, you know, he's still kind of doing the same behaviors that he's always done. you know, not calling when he's off work, not necessarily putting her as a as his number one type of thing. And you know, here she is trying to create this new history. Well, she's now scared as all get out because she doesn't know what to do. You know, this new history hasn't, there's very little to help her cling on. And so she was extremely anxious, you know, and almost to the extent that she became extremely possessive. And that the extent of that was all as a result of, I don't have a history. So, you know, we're wading through this water and I'm going to cling on to you for dear life because I've got nothing behind me. I've got nothing around me. You are what I'm doing my new history. And so I explained that to the guy that this is what she was struggling with. And, you know, once he understood that, then he was able to kind of help her with that in creating a new history. But understanding that this is the perspective that women have. And again, the difference between men and women in this particular situation of how we set those markers is we set those markers based off of what we're told. So, you know, you can find, and when I've interviewed women, and both criminal and as in psychology, when I've interviewed women on milestones, you know, what are some milestones that you accomplished? You know, whether it was a quinceañera for a lot of Latina women or Sweet 16, you know, those ideas of, oh, well, so-and-so told me this, and I remember so-and-so told me that, you know, even to the extent of a wedding, you know, and my dad told me, and you'll hear those types of statements. So the verbalization helps set up those cues. It provides a memory of the milestones, and they oftentimes will look forward to sayings. You know, that's the example of, you know, when we write our own vows or, you know, what is it that you're going to say? Because this is something I'm going to remember and I'm going to hold you accountable for. Remember, we force guys to take vows and oaths partly because they're so contextual in what they say as far as truth. And you know, it really is that what they do has more truth and is more impactful than what they say. But, well, it's the exact opposite for women. What you say matters. And I think that men often screw this up because women talk about everything. You know, it's that idea of the hen house. You know, my dad used to joke about that. All the cluckers would get together and cluck, 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 cluck at the hen house. And drove him nuts, you know, type of thing. But my dad wasn't really an outgoing kind of guy where he was spending a lot of time with women. But he did make mention of that, you know, a hen house and how the women always kind of, and so that is very normal. In fact, I remember when I was in junior high, I really saw that. I was a little bit more aware at that time, and I saw how women would talk to each other and how hugely competitive women are with each other. And so in that process of that clucking, you know, the talking back and forth that would go on, women really galvanize each other on words. Well, she said this, and I can't believe that she said that. And so, you know, they really hang on those words, and that's what they mean by listening is that they listen for the words. They listen for keywords so that they can project that in future of what they expect to hear. And they often will say, well, what I wanted to hear was this, and they'll use a statement, or what I wanted to know is this, and then they'll provide a statement. Women are expert at the word why, and why is to elicit a verbal response. Guys avoid why because why is a dangerous question. It's accusatory, and I would rather you see what I've done, acknowledge what I've done, whether it's good or bad, and then let's move on. And for women, it's like, no, tell me this, tell me that, tell me this, and it's all based off words. So it's really kind of fascinating when you kind of look at these differences that, you know, women need words. Trust what a woman says because she'll always say it. And if you find that she's not always saying it, that's where you have a lie or deception. When she backs off from saying it, because oftentimes women, even when they're confronted with what they're saying as being a falsehood or not being absolutely correct, they'll say, well, I don't know then, or something along those lines where they don't admit the wrongness of it, but they will actually have to stop and reconsider it. Again, they would rather take time to consider what it is that they're going to say, because once they've said it, it's concrete. And if they're going to destroy that concrete, man, they have to have something to replace it because it's a huge void for them. That's where they carry a lot of their emotion is within the words. They love by appreciation, meaning that, for them to be appreciated and for men, what I think appreciation is more, real as is this idea of understanding, looking for, hey, I saw that you were with the kids all day. I saw that, you know, so I'm going to go, get a bath going, or I'm going to buy you a massage, or, well, let's go out to dinner, or I'm going to make sure that the kids are all good so we can go do something, something along those lines. That's that understanding, which women will say is appreciation. But really, it's more along the lines of, do you understand me? And how do you understand me? Do you understand what I've been through today? And again, that's that historical perspective that you can change it and create a new history for them. And oftentimes, that's what they report back to their girlfriends or friends, maybe even other sex, opposite sex friends. But they'll report that, last night he did this. And it was really nice because, he got it, that I've been struggling with this or doing that, or, I've been overworked or I just needed time to get away. They understood me. And that's really what they're saying. And so, but they often will reflect that back as saying that, that I felt appreciated. I felt like, you got me. So it's always kind of an interesting, part. Women oftentimes, in the way that they think in somewhat of a multitasking fashion of, all these things need to get done. And so systematically, I'm going to go through and do all these types of things. But they're not looking for respect like men are. They're not going, hey, I did this, so, understand that. The only time that they're looking for understanding is when they get overloaded, or when they've just been doing it without having any type of partnership. Then they're looking for that understanding. But for the most part, they don't need, every day, oh, wow, thank you for, doing this, or thank you for doing that, or, whatever it might be. So it's different as a port, with men having that fantasy thinking and that slaying the dragon. That's different for women. What they want to be is appreciated. They also, because of the competitive nature, they want to be selected and elected. So let me talk a little bit about the competitive nature. There is a hierarchy of women. And so the hierarchy of women, which I think I brought up before, but the hierarchy of women starts off with at the total top is our grandma, who still has a husband. It doesn't even have to be grandpa. It can be grandma with a husband. And we all respect her. She just seems to have her wits around her. She's just a very strong woman. That's usually how we speak about her. When you have grandma without a husband, she's always kind of funny, kind of crazy, and we just kind of see her as that. We don't necessarily see her as this wonderful, knowledgeable person. She's just kind of batty, just kind of crazy. And then it kind of moves down in the hierarchy. Then it goes into kind of the coup de grace. The grand place of womanhood is married with children. Okay, so then we have this ball that's called the mom-wife ball, and I'll explain that in a little bit. But just understand that is kind of the epitome of what a lot of women kind of connect with as being who they are. Even if they reject it and they go become career woman, and just by the way, everybody hates career woman. There's a lot of movies about how evil they are and how mean they are and trying to live in a man's world. And really, you have to give up. There's a rejection of the norm to be that career woman. And because of that, it creates an anxiety between women where that woman, the career woman, will oftentimes see herself as above, see herself as different. But as she ages, she might understand that maybe there was a different path that she could have chose. But often she doesn't regret it, doesn't go more than that. But there is a rejection to be career woman, and that rejection continues with her by women who are married with children. And likewise, sometimes married with children wish they had done that, or maybe they had a career to start off with and they chose to be a mother with children, a wife with children, but they get it kind of messed up a little bit along the way, and normal life kind of dredges up things, and so it creates a kind of an interesting dynamic for them, to where they consider, oh, I should have been, you know, this, or I should have, and really what it was is I should have been a career woman. But just know, if you're a career woman, you have a different trajectory in life, but you already know that most of the women over on this other side of the pillar they kind of despise you and don't like you. Then you go with married with children down to divorce with children. And so keep in mind that when a woman is facing divorce, this is one of the fears that she has, is that she actually gets lowered on the hierarchy just by the fact that she's getting divorced. There's still stigmas in this because the hierarchy still exists. It will always exist. And no matter how we go through time, this idea that I failed, there must be something wrong with me, I've been demoted, I'm going to be, you know, how are other women going to see me? I'm going to be embarrassed because, you know, grandma who's still married, maybe she's on her second husband, but man, you know, she seemed to know what she was doing and I don't. Here I am divorced with children. Nobody wants me. Men don't want me. They run away from it. So there's this rejection and dejection. It's a demotion to be divorced with children. And then you go into single with children. Single with children, dating aspect-wise, is different than divorced with children, because single with children means, you know, in some instances, I chose to be single, or, you know, this was our children was because, you know, I had a moral or belief system. But inevitably, you're looked down upon to some extent because you weren't chosen. You weren't selected and elected. And we kind of feel sorry for you that you are single mom, single without children. Even though other single moms with children may rally around you, divorced with children sees you differently, and married with children definitely sees you differently. Everybody kind of sees you as not really being capable of making good decisions. You're kind of seen infantile compared to divorced or married with children, and obviously grandma and grandma with married. And then from there you move down to single woman, the only woman that you can hang out with is single woman. Every woman above you is going to tell you how life is, and you'll struggle with that because sometimes you want to listen, but the reality is that you're a single woman, you're on your trajectory to become, and you really see the importance of it. You see the wisdom of being married with children, and so a lot of women really aspire to do that. If there's a rejection in that, then you move on to either a career woman, or you can go into that place of, I want to be single all by myself. And a lot of times what you're rejecting is the system that women play. It's always kind of fascinating because the anxiousness that goes on between women. I have women that come in to see me and they're like, you know what? I don't like hanging out with other women because they're all catty and bitchy and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you became the de facto top woman only because you refuse to relate to other women. That's your relationship. But even then, all you'll talk about is how you related to the other women and how the other women treated you badly. So that's kind of the hierarchy of women. It's important to kind of understand that that also adds into the way that women think, because they all know that that hierarchy exists, whether they like it or not is a different story altogether, but they know that that hierarchy exists. Then there was that one that I wanted to talk a little bit about in as far as the wife mother ball. Remember me talking about that universality that happens for women. And if they think something, if they've agreed upon a rule or a description or a definition, they will hold that universally throughout. Well, once you become mom, there's something that kind of takes over, and you're more than likely wife beforehand. You may be single woman with children. If you play that role of mom wife, the reality is that what gets women into a lot of trouble is that they consider being mom as being a good wife. And guys don't oftentimes help with that because there's kind of this mindset that, oh, well, you know, I want my wife to be a good mom. Well, the reality is that for a proper kind of understanding of who you are and a proper relationship, you have to give yourself the idea that those are two separate jobs, and it's very difficult to separate those for women. But understand that mom and mothering is its own job, and being a wife is a separate job. The two really should not be combined. You know, some people appreciate it when they are combined, but the reality is that when I see people coming in and they're having conflict in the marriage, that's oftentimes what the problem is that they're so into mom that they start mothering their husband, you know, and the reality is that I know that there's an Oedipus complex, and maybe there are some guys out there that do appreciate older women, but the reality is that it's real hard to have sex with your mom. I mean, that's just the fact of it. And so let's not put guys in that situation. Let's not put ourselves in that situation as women, and understand that being a wife has a whole bunch of different responsibilities. I don't want to say duties because it's not like this is a demand, but you know, you have to work that out with your partner as knowing, you know, what is it that you expect from a wife, and defining what a wife is and making sure that it is separate from what a mom is, because it's going to help you a lot with the empty nesting syndrome on down the road. Because remember, you know, for most people, you know, 25 years, you know, somewhere between 18 to 25 years per child is all you get. And if we're expecting them to live into their 60s and 70s, you're talking about they're going to be on their own for, you know, way more than they're ever going to be with you. And so that empty nest is really something you need to consider. But again, that history educates your future. And so a lot of women get caught up in this because if they think that if they're a really good mom, you know, all the way up until 18, 19 years old, that they're going to continue to be able to mom to, you know, forever. And kids will slap them in the face with reality and say, you know what, I don't need a mom anymore. And then, you know, then women feel that rejection and feel isolated, and then they go back to their husband. And you know, well, a husband is going to be kind of like, well, I don't know what you want from me. I don't need to be mothered. I've been living on my own for a long period of time. So understanding that particular aspect is very important in separating that. The idea that in a couple, what we're looking for in as a woman is, remember that history has to educate our future, and where that hope is, that small glimpse of what our future, what we want it to be like, that's what we match up with a man's fantasy. So often in the dating circuit, a man will start telling him, this is what I want to be. This is who I am. And if that starts matching that small little prism in the hope bubble, then we tend to go, okay, well, I'll give this guy a chance. You know, obviously there has to be some sort of other attraction, sexual attraction, emotional attraction. But once we have that idea that this guy matches, his fantasy matches our hope, then, that's what we tend to kind of grasp onto, and sometimes inappropriately grasp onto. Maybe we grasp onto it too much and we get hurt by that. But that's the connection between men and women is that we recognize that their fantasies, at least at the time, and remember they're contextual, speak to our hope, our historical sense of future. And so, you know, this idea of a future past, present past, and past, when we encounter a guy that can speak the talk that we're looking for, we're often move into it. In fact, some guys will even, if they know that, will try to utilize that as a weapon or weaponize that against us, and try to give us an idea that what you see in that future is not what you want. What you really want is a new history with me, and I'm going to help you with that new history, and here's how I'm going to help you with that new history. And that can be